Welcome to Wham Bam Pow. I am not Cameron Esposito, your usual host. I am Rhea Butcher, also known as the Lady James Dean. I am stepping in for one Cameron Esposito and taking over the host seat. And I actually did take the host seat. I'm not sitting in my seat because you got to do that. I'm taking over because Cameron is currently in Denver, Colorado, opening up for Mr. Anthony Jeselnik, as she has been doing for quite some time, which is super awesome. I've heard the shows are going very well, so that's exciting. Alongside me, as always, I'm not in here alone. I'm not just talking to the booth. It's not just me. I have the Afro spokesperson, Mr. Ricky Carmona. How are you doing, Ricky?
What it do, one people? I'm doing very well, Rhea.
What it
How
do,
are you?
Mario Van People?
Oh, I can't wait till we talk about Posse. I'm
me
doing well.
Neither.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good. What did you get up to this past week between podcasts?
Well, I did watch some movies. I watched our movie that we are going to be talking about. I watched,
which is, we should let everybody know up top, if you aren't already prepared, it is Event Horizon, which is currently available on Netflix Watch Instant. So you should totally watch that 1997 sci-fi horror flick and listen to us spoil it and talk about it, because we're very funny.
Oh, absolutely. As James Fritz was letting me know yesterday.
Mr. James Fritz,
friend of the show,
comic, now living in Los Angeles.
Very funny man. He called it the Facebook event horizon.
And that would be a great sketch.
Oh, man. He was letting me know many a times.
Yes.
You were letting me know many times, James, that it was Facebook event.
So what
horizon.
Other movies did you watch?
I watched Zero Dark Thirty.
Oh, was this your first time watching
No,
Zero
this
Dark
was 30? My second time watching Zero Dark Thirty, and it was very good. I enjoyed it very much. I think, like, since the first time I'd seen it was in the theater, and
Ooh.
People applauded at the end of it.
Whoa.
And then the next time was just, like, seeing it at the Oscars, so I'd kind of, like, not lied to myself, but I convinced myself, like, oh, yes, this is this huge, epic, you know, a fucking majestic movie, and it's very great and whatnot. But I was like, oh, this is a much more toned down movie than I remember.
It's Zero Dark, down and dirty.
Yeah,
you know, it's like not. It's terrifying. Also, I can't believe you saw that in the theater.
I did. Yeah.
Were you just like gripping the armrests the whole time? Because I kind of
not as much as I was when I saw The Hurt Locker. The Hurt Locker, I was very much like, ugh, shit, this is, leave that bomb alone, dude. Just go home. You don't
sure.
need to do that. Get another job, man. Sell shoes, bro. You want to sell shoes?
I am sure the picking up the garbage is a lot better. But also, we salute you, those Hurt Lockers that are out there. We
all those Hurt
all
Lockers out there.
It's very scary.
Shout out to the Foot Lockers as well. Come on.
Yes. Giving us the Nikes that we kind of want. Do you ever notice they don't have, like, the cool Nikes in Foot Locker? You're always like, I wish they just had slightly different version, or at least that's
no. It's all. It's all the. It's either, what was it, the LeBrons, the Jordans. I'm trying to get the Carmonas in there.
Yeah, get those Carmonas in there.
Oh man, they are hot.
Well, I watched a movie this weekend. Other than our Facebook event Horizon film that we watch, I went to see Transcendence in the movie theater. And I paid for it.
I am applauding all
Thank
of that.
You.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Ricky. I've been wanting to see it. I knew it was not going to be good. It's not like I was like, oh, I think everybody else is wrong. But I really wanted to see it because it's an original-ish, you know, I mean, it's an original screenplay, sci-fi property. And I have to say, I saw it in a theater in Los Angeles, this vintage theater, The Vista, that we
went
to.
Nice.
And there were kids there, which was like really exciting to me that there were like kids, and I bet they were carrying books with them. Like, it was just really nice to see kids that like wanted to see a movie that is basically all talking, you know, like seeing a semi-classic sci-fi movie.
Would you say thumbs up, thumbs down to Transcendence?
I unfortunately
do you
have
more
this
thoughts you need to? I don't want to cut you off either.
Hey, we're just this is just the up top, so we're gonna get through it soon. But I would give it a thumbs solidly sideways.
Oh, all right.
It is not a good movie. But did I enjoy watching it in how bad it was? Yes.
Okay.
It was not, like, offensively bad.
Okay.
It just, and, but it, the biggest bummer, I would say this, the biggest bummer of the movie is that it had so much potential to actually be a good movie that if they would have gone through the script a couple more times and just thought, like, oh, these people are people, not just puppets that are going to spout things that you might think an FBI agent would say in this situation. Like, it just makes no sense.
Yeah.
There's no character motivation.
How is the Rooney's? There's a Rooney in this one, right?
Rooney the Younger.
The Younger Rooney. How is her bleach blonde hair? How's the performance specifically of that hair?
It looks insane. It really does. Now, I say this because she comes to my dog park. So I've seen her actual hair.
Oh.
So I can tell you that it doesn't look good. It's a weird choice. It's just a weird, sad depth movie.
Yeah.
There's just no depth
to
the depth in this movie.
Depthless.
Yeah, it's depthless. It's depthless. And with that, we'll be right back with some news, reviews, and some things you can use. All right, we are back with some news. And just, you know, if you guys want to tweet at me if you've seen Transcendence, if you're of the 10 people that went to see that movie over the weekend, feel free to tweet me your opinions. I'm real curious about it. I'd like to hear what the 10 of you thought. Because, of course, those 10 people that saw the movie definitely listen to this podcast. The Venn diagram is just two Frisbees right over top of it.
I'm surprised you guys didn't recognize each other at the show.
Yeah, we all just went to the same theater. It was those two kids. So we've got some news stuff coming up. I think the biggest one that we'll just start off with is that the Justice League movie is basically mostly confirmed. In a quote by Greg Silverman, I got most of this off of IO9, I believe, or Slash Film, both sites that we love.
We enjoy them very much.
I probably quoted them. Greg Silverman, the production president of Warner Brothers, he said that to the Wall Street Journal that 2018 is a projected date, with Warner Brothers also saying it will come out 2 years after Supes 2. So what do you think about this Justice League?
I hope they're calling it Supes 2, first off. I would be all on board with that. As you know, big fan of Man of Steel. So I like that they're just kind of... DC has been getting a lot of shit for how they're handling their movies. But I'm a fan of Zack Snyder, and I like that he right now is the consistent vision for these main tentpole movies that are coming out.
So is Zack Snyder, because this is like maybe a hole in my research here, is Zack Snyder going to be directing the Justice League as well?
Yeah, he's doing Superman, he's doing Supes 2 now,
Supes
as
soup.
It shall be known.
Supes 2, Supes on.
Supes 2, Supes on, Supes up!
No, that's part 3, Ricky.
Sorry, I don't want to mess up the chronology. And then I believe right into that, they're going to go into the Justice League movie. There's like a gray area as to whether or not it's going to come out in, I believe the year you said was 2018, or if it'll be like...
It's supposed to be a two-year gap between Superman 2, Supes 2, and Justice League 1.
Yes.
Justice League Part 1. Because, hey, of course.
So
I just feel like they're taking their sweet time. Like, DC is taking their sweet time making some properties, and I feel like by 2018, I mean, Marvel is just like churning it out.
Yeah.
And they're kind of the reason that superheroes are even a thing right now. And I just wonder if people are going to care by then for like an ensemble.
I thought about that. And I think what could happen at that point is like all the shitty comic book movies that we get sick of, they have gone away. And maybe these are like the last two standing, like this Justice League movie series that's going to be happening. And wherever the Avengers is at that point. I don't know what's happening after Age of Ultron.
I think it's the dawning of Aquarius.
Is it really?
Yes.
What do I set my alarm to? Which one?
Well, the moon is in the seventh house, and then Avengers 2 Age of Ultron comes out.
Oh,
then
man.
Justice League, Supes 2, Supes on. That's how that goes.
Those are going to be hot.
I wonder also how much, the Superman versus Batman, Superman and Batman, whatever it is. I can't remember what the modifier is or whatever that word is called. I wonder how much that performance will affect Justice League, like whether they'll do it or not.
Well, I mean, we're putting a lot of we don't know yet based on the little that we do know from Man of Steel. And a lot of people didn't like that movie. So, like, we're yeah. kind of, so, like, we're already, like, going into it with this negative kind of, you know, this skewed view of it. You know, casting Ben Affleck, that didn't help things either. But I got faith in you, Zach.
I do.
I think you can pull it off.
I think by then he might even be a better director by that time. Now, I mean that in the most, I don't mean that in like a really slanderous way.
No, for sure.
I do actually think his direction is getting better the more he makes movies.
Yeah.
So I think Man of Steel versus, 300 or whatever was his first thing.
Yeah, 300
like,
was his first
thing.
Oh, one.
I can actually follow this. But I don't know. The other quote that really stuck out to me in regards to Justice League and all of this stuff is that the Warner Brothers marketing president, Sue Kroll, was also quoted as saying a Wonder Woman solo film would be very possible if Gal Gadot is received well. I love that that is like, just make a Wonder Woman movie already. For crying out, honestly, that out of everything, because so many people are thinking about it, because there are so many girls that would be into it, there are so many boys that would be into it, there's so many adults that would be into it. Honestly, just make the Wonder Woman movie.
For sure.
And that would kick the Justice League into gear. Then people would actually be into it. Not like the same stuff over and over again. Yeah, we'll do Batman and Superman, then one more Superman, then we'll do Justice League. And if you guys like Wonder Woman and this other stuff, then maybe we'll just do Wonder Woman.
Just get to
the Wonder Woman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I feel like maybe they almost have to like tease it a little bit to like get the audiences more like, oh, wait, are they going to do it? Oh, then we should go see, then we have to go see Justice League so they can make the Wonder Woman movie.
Warner Brothers is just putting on like the worst burlesque show I've ever seen. It's all teasing.
What did you think of burlesque? That was probably
Never saw it because it was not at the Redbox. I could never find it. Well, we'll see how the Justice League news keeps plopping out at us and see what more info we get. So this second news item I happened upon today, and it really just made me happy. So I wanted to talk about it for that reason. I was popping around on the internet, and I saw that already on April 29th, 3 days before it premieres in the United States, we already have the Blu-ray packaging on the internet for The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And it is the beautiful translucent blue skull of Jamie Foxx's Electro. And then the disc just pops out of the back. So, Ricky.
Yes.
Being from a similar generation as myself,
mm-hmm.
where we had to wait 10 years for a VHS copy.
Yeah, we did.
And it was only one copy, and we all had to share it when that movie came out, and we were so excited. And it cost $600.
Yeah,
you could
did.
Only rent it from like a Dairy Mart or a Circle K, which didn't exist yet, or a 7-Eleven or whatever, and you had to give them a credit card, and they just kept your credit card forever.
Yeah, they did. Still have my credit card.
They still have my they still have my Diners Club. From 1986. Back in the 80s, they used to give kids credit cards.
Also, Rhea and I are 47 years old.
2,000 years old. So, I know merchandising is just insane, and what's the point of even talking about that? But how crazy do you think it is that there is already the Blu-ray packaging of a movie that's not even in the theater yet?
It's not as crazy as it used to be. I'd say like 10 years ago, like because now everything is a package. It's like they don't talk about the movie anymore. They talk about the franchise,
sure.
You know?
Yes, so like, Supes 2.
Yeah, Supes 2. You know, we're already upset about the Wonder Woman movie they haven't even made yet. They haven't even written it yet. I saw the Jamie Foxx Electro bust. I mean, you know. 12-year-old me thinks it looks cool.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I think it's funny that they make those Blu-ray cases. Where the hell do you put that in your house?
Yeah.
And if that is the only kind of packaging that you collect, you've got to have some serious space in your house.
Absolutely.
To just have a bunch of heads staring at you. It's going to look like if you only collected those types of Blu-rays, it's just like Dorothy Gale walking into that weird head closet in Return to Oz. No, Miguel!
I was imagining the kid in Poltergeist who kept like waking up and seeing the scary clown, except you kept waking up and just seeing your scary Blu-rays.
Just scary
just
Blu-ray
looking at
glowing.
You. Yeah, monster
I guess it's time
you've
to
created.
Watch Amazing Superman 2. Spider-Man 2. Excuse me. Don't get mad
don't
at me.
Don't write letters.
I'm sorry I said
don't
the wrong thing.
Tweet at us.
We're not actors. We don't get to rehearse.
We do not. This is all right off the top of the dome piece, kids. All right.
So, I mean, you're into it. I don't know how I feel about it.
About the actual... I'm sorry. I will answer your question. About the actual... how quickly this is coming out. Actually, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, I remember... I think Batman in 89 was the first movie that came out on VHS the same summer. Or, I'm sorry, not the same summer. Batman came out in the summer of 89, and then you could get it on video like that Thanksgiving. And I was like,
that's fast.
We live in the fucking future. It's happening, you know? So for it to be like, for this right now,
in the
yeah,
same
it's cool.
calendar year for a movie to be printed the same calendar yeah. year is pretty crazy.
And it's also, have you gotten used to it yet? Even just like living in LA, sometimes I'll get screeners in advance. And it's just like, holy shit, I'm watching this at my house, and I know, you know, five blocks away at the Arclight, if I happen to live five blocks away from the Arclight.
Well, you didn't say which direction.
I didn't say which Arclight. that there's like, you know, a room of people watching it in a theater right now.
For thousands of dollars.
A bottle of water at the Arclight costs $875.
It really does. It's that bottling fee.
It is. So that's I think that's pretty cool. The I don't want to get too off topic, but I was listening to a podcast with Ivan Reitman this week, and he was talking about how he's kind of not in favor of it because it does take away from the movie going experience,
merchandising in general, or the yeah. speediness of
definitely merchandising
films coming out.
The accessibility that we have to movies so easily now that we don't go to the movies to enjoy it as a communal thing. And he was talking about how Ghostbusters, yes, it's a great movie, and we all love to watch it, but it's such a different experience when you watch it in a large room with a group of people, whether they're your friends or strangers. And I mean, it's kind of valid, you know? I mean, I love watching Ghostbusters by myself, of course, but watching it in a room full of people and just hearing everybody laugh, it just elevates it, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. For sure. So don't buy Jamie Foxx's blue head and watch Ghostbusters together with your friends and family. That's the conclusion we've come to on that one.
Does he have the Ray glasses on at least?
No, sadly he doesn't have the
what?
Ray glasses on. It's just
what?
Straight up Electro. That's it. So my little last piece of news is that I watched the trailer for the upcoming Cinemax show. Cinemax, not Skinemax.
Oh.
Show, The Nick, which is directed by a friend of the show, Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah.
So... Ricky, you and I are pretty solidly Steven Soderbergh fans.
Absolutely.
Collectively. How do you feel about him being in TV now?
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I'm super on board.
Steven can do just keep. If you're not going to direct movies anymore, then and you're going to direct TV now, or I don't know if he's directing the whole series, or is he just doing the first episode?
You know what? I don't know.
I don't know, but direct
either
that one or direct them all, whatever keeps you working. You know, I'm a huge fan of his.
I feel like he's perfect for television, and I think television is perfect for him right now because of the battles it seems that he has to wage just to put a movie out.
Yeah.
Whereas TV is like, sure, yeah. Do you have 3 hours of material?
For
great,
sure.
We'll make it.
Absolutely. So, especially after, I mean, Behind the Candelabra is so goddamn good. I trust him.
He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he's one of those guys where it's like, yeah, you know, show it to me.
Yeah. I feel like actually just let Steven Soderbergh make every TV show. Like
okay.
every TV show that's on right now, let him take over Walking Dead. Do
Steven
a couple
Soderbergh,
Mad Men's.
True Detective.
Yeah.
That would be dope.
Yes.
That would
Hello,
be dope, right?
HBO,
be really dope.
Are you listening? Steven Soderbergh should be directing the next.
That would be really dope.
True Detective. It should just be Steven Soderbergh and Channing Tatum. True Detective season 2. So, Ricky, you have our final bit of news.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
everybody.
I have, now this is a little bit more local LA news. But it's something that I read that made me very excited because I think it's one of the best things that the LA has to offer, especially if you're a movie fan. Cinespia has released the first month of their cemetery screenings every summer.
Which is at Hollywood,
At the Hollywood Forever Cemetery on Santa Monica Boulevard. It's like Santa Monica and Gower. And they always play great movies every year. Last year, I went and saw Boogie Nights there, and I saw Taxi Driver there. We're an action sci-fi podcast, so I'll tell you some the ones that I saw that I think might be of interest to listeners. On May 17th, they will be screening Seven, the very funny, very lighthearted.
Perfect for a cemetery.
David Fincher, Morgan Freeman, Brad Pitt, and Seven. On May 24th, they'll be screening Jaws. I mean, come on.
That's great.
How dope is that going to be in a cemetery watching that?
Like, wheel the shark on
wheel over. Wheel Bruce out there?
Yeah, wheel Bruce. Yep, exactly.
Oh, that would be pretty great. You know, it's not going as well for him up in Universal Studios.
Yeah, he's a little bored.
He is. And then they're rounding out May with... you know, now this wouldn't be considered an action movie. Maybe back in the day it wouldn't either, but who knows? Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window, which I'm a big fan of. I'm a big fan of Rear Window.
I'm only laughing because you said I don't think this would be considered an action movie, which I think is hilarious because he's in a wheelchair the whole time. I mean, it's not that you can't be an action star and be in a wheelchair,
yes,
which you totally can.
You totally
it's that
can.
He's in the same spot in a wheelchair. That's what I love about that. Not the wheelchair part.
Was that a stretch on my part?
Stuck my foot in my mouth again. That's not what I meant. The world is ready for Wonder Woman in a wheelchair being an action hero. It's just anything is possible.
Here's my wallet. I will throw it at this microphone to make it happen.
Well, that's
great. And Synespia is also doing, they like renovated a theater in downtown LA. And I know they did Tron there like 2 weeks ago, the original Tron. And I think they're going to be doing more movies like that. They did the Royal Tenenbaums, your boy, Wes Anderson. So Synespia is great. Check out their website, synespia.org, for more information.
Awesome. Thanks, Ricky, for that
little
like travel log
section. Did you like that?
Yeah, that was great. You're like a real Rick Steves over here.
I don't know who that is.
Look it up. All right, we'll be back with What's Poppin'. Mr. Ricky Carmona's segment when we come on back.
What's up? My name is Jasper Redd, co-host of The Goose Down, along with the lovely Kimberly Clark, and we want to invite you into the comfort and groove of our podcast that encompasses the arts and entertainment. You can check us out at MaximumFun.org. Also available on iTunes. See ya.
All right, we are back. Up next is What's Poppin' with Ricky Carmona. But first, I want to apologize again for the wheelchair comment. Because I feel like, man, I'm just going to eat it on Twitter, and that's not what I meant. There was actually a show on PBS that I used to watch when I was a kid called Square One, I believe was the name of the show. Do you know what I'm talking about? It was like an ensemble sketch
learning
show.
Yeah, and a lot
of people that, like character actors, like a guy that was on The Wire, which I'm never going to be able to describe. He was Carchetti's, like, he ran his campaign.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember that guy. He was very funny. He was on that show.
Was Square One the one where they had, it was like two detectives, but they were like math detectives?
Yes, that was MathNet.
Yeah, MathNet.
That was a show within that show. They had MathNet.
There
was an episode of MathNet that was Rear Window. And it had, now I'm blanking on his name, Perry Mason. It had
Raymond Burr?
Raymond Burr in the episode, and I was terrified of him because he was like the supposed killer or whatever. There was also an episode of MathNet with Yeardley Smith.
Oh, wow.
On it. She was like the star of it. She had a gorilla that got out of the cage, but then they proved it because it doesn't have an opposable thumb, so it couldn't have known the combination to the lock.
Of course.
So I definitely still remember those plots, but I couldn't tell you how to figure out like an algebra problem. But thank you, MathNet, because now I understand pop culture. So anyway, Ricky is going to let us know what's popping this week. So what's popping, Ricky?
Well, this what's popping is, this is a recommendation for what you popcorn you should have while you watch the movie that we will be talking about, Event Horizon. Now, it's been a while since we've done a What's Poppin', so I want to let you know right now, when we make popcorn, we make it on the stove. We don't make it in the microwave like some animal. We don't do that.
I do love that you say like an animal as though an animal would have a microwave.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And also the microwave is the more evolved thing. I think an animal would have a stove.
No.
If it was going to have any appliance, it would probably have the rudimentary one.
No, they use the microwave that's on top of the stove as well, yeah. The one that hangs up there. They can get up there.
Filthy animals.
Can you believe it? Can you believe it? So the popcorn that I prepared, it was a trial and error on this one. It was a trial and error.
Hey.
Because I told myself this is going to be a scary movie, so let's just go with straight traditional, Ricky. Let's go with popcorn and salt. But let's alter it a little bit, you know? Let's go with sea salt.
Ooh.
So I put, you know.
Earthy.
Yes, indeed. I got some big crack rock sizes of sea salt and put that on there. Started eating while I'm watching the movie. No good. No good
at all.
Negative.
Oh.
You know what? The sea salt, too overpowering.
It's not iodized either.
It is not iodized.
So you won't get any iodine.
It is granulated. That's just a word I wanted to say.
Indeed it is.
So I finished that bowl up very quickly. I still ate it all, but I was not happy with it. Made another bowl. Now here's where we knocked it out. We got our popcorn, and the kernels that we use, white corn kernels.
Yeah, never
if you go
yellow.
To the store. I tried yellow once, not a fan.
Me neither.
Not a fan at all. Prefer the white corn kernels.
I don't even like the color, like the food coloring ones.
Yeah.
It makes them soggy, don't you think?
I felt like it made it extra salty on mine. Mm. You know?
Yeah, I feel like they're pre-sogged a little, and I don't like that.
No.
I don't like soggy popcorn.
No, who does?
Ugh.
Who does?
Ugh, a friend
of mine. Unless you're putting butter on it. I like a little drip.
No, cancel it. Not into it.
So
it's a fluffy, dry thing. Why would you soak it in oil? I don't understand why people.
You're not going to like the rest of these ingredients I'm about
to read.
Well,
go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt
No, it's all right. It's okay.
Recipe.
So we white corn kernels. And I'll tell you this right now, too. You don't have to go for the fancy Orville Redenbacher. I get mine at Pavilions. Shout out to Pavilions. Send us free shit. I use the white corn kernels, just like the Safeway brand that they
Literally
have.
Literally run of the mill.
Literally run of the mill. Goddamn right. And then what word am I not thinking of here?
Pot.
Thank you. I am not wasted right now, ladies and gentlemen. Pop it in the pot after it's over. Then I went olive oil. I didn't go butter. I don't know which one is healthier. Is olive oil healthier?
I think it is.
Is it?
Now, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
Because
sure
this
can.
Is kind of a back and forth.
Yeah,
what's popping?
Yep.
Do you ever pop a little bit of olive oil into the cooking oil to pop the popcorn in the olive oil?
That's what I do.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying you drizzled olive oil on top,
which could also
be delicious.
Yeah. I start off with a little layer of oil in the pot.
Yes.
Throw the kernels in there. Let that bitch pop up. And then I sprinkle olive oil over that.
Okay.
And then I want to make sure that I read off exactly what it is. I use Urban Accents Caramel Corn Seasoning.
What?
So we have olive oil, caramel corn, just regular salt. No sea salt this time. I threw some stank on that bitch, bam, and we reached the event horizon and enjoyed ourselves. Quite a movie.
The event pop risen.
Yes.
The event horror corn risen. There it is.
There it is.
The event corn risen.
The event corn risen. And I paired that popcorn with a lovely glass of Yellowtail Shiraz.
Ah,
yes.
Was it from the big bottle or the normal size?
It was the little bottle because I had company over and I drink wine right out of the bottle.
Yeah.
They didn't need to see me drinking right out of that big ass bottle.
Totally understood.
They could totally see me drinking out of the regular size bottle.
Now, let me ask you, this
Urban Accents.
Accents.
Yes. Caramel corn seasoning.
Wow.
Yes, it's
very
tasty.
And you got this from Pavilions.
This was given as a gift to me by my friends who know how serious I take my popcorn.
Clearly.
I have the caramel corn flavor, and I have the cheddar cheese flavor.
Wow.
Cheddar cheese, a little too salty for me.
Yeah.
A little too salty.
I can see that.
Caramel corn, especially if you use it, what's great about the olive oil is that it doesn't get soggy, Rhea. It doesn't get soggy.
No, I know.
But you put that as seasoning on there, and it just kind of gives it like this coat, this powdery little
sticks
coat.
Sticks right on there.
Woo!
Yeah.
Shit's on fire.
That sounds like really good popcorn.
It's the real deal. It's the real deal.
Well, you guys, I hope you wrote that all down.
Yeah.
And
Email me. Tweet at me. I'll give you the recipe.
Tweet at him about his Urban Horizons.
Urban Accents.
Accents.
American Apparel.
American Caramel. Lost in Paris, whatever it was. So get your event Corn Risins getting ready, and then we're going to be back with a review in just a few minutes.
Hey, Ross.
Hey, Carrie.
Hey, it's me, your co-host.
Oh, yeah, we have a show, don't we?
We have a show.
Oh, no, Ross and Carrie.
Oh, no, Ross and Carrie. It's about undercover investigations of fringe groups.
Yeah, like the Tony Alamo Ministries cult.
Yep, that's led by a pedophile.
He's in jail.
He's in jail. Also, we became Mormons. We became Raelians, which is a UFO group.
That's right. We joined the Ordo Templi Orientis.
Yes, the 9/11 truthers. We got cupped, we got acupunctured, we got Reiki. We've pretty much anything that you've heard of and been like, that doesn't sound quite right. We've done that.
So you don't have to do it.
So if you want to hear about this, and you should, then go to MaximumFun.org.
All right. It's been a few minutes, as I said, I'm sure. And you guys are back. And we're back, and we are going to head into our review of Event Horizon. First, I am going to let you guys know one more time that spoilers are going to follow. We're just going to talk about the movie, not trying to hurt your feelings or anything. But if you don't want to know anything about the movie, just pause it, watch it, and then come back to us. Or just listen to it because it's a 17-year-old movie, and who cares?
Watch it along while you're listening to us.
Yeah, watch it at the same time.
We're
it's
right
not going to be in real time, but hey, you'll get it. You'll understand. We are going to watch or talk about Event Horizon, which is available on Netflix Watch Instant right now. Awesome. So, Event Horizon. This film is directed by one Paul W.S. Anderson and written by Philip Eisner.
Yes.
who didn't write anything else, really.
Is that right?
I looked it up. This is his biggest credit.
Okay.
Which is kind of shocking because I actually think it's not a horrifying script. I don't think it's that bad. And then Paul W.S. Anderson.
No relation to Paul Thomas Anderson.
Right. At the time of Event Horizon, he was still going by Paul Anderson, which I think was incredibly confusing because that is also right when Paul Thomas Anderson was becoming Paul Thomas Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
So super confusing. But he only made Mortal Kombat before this and got the chance to make Event Horizon off of Mortal Kombat. Now, I didn't do a ton of research on Mortal Kombat. You guys should just go listen to the episode of How Did This Get Made with Cameron Esposito as a guest talking about Mortal Kombat. Then pop back into this episode and it'll be great. It's perfect synergy. But that movie did not do well. I can't believe...
Which one? Mortal Kombat?
Mortal Kombat.
Did not do well?
I don't think it did that well. It's just surprising to me that he got... That they were like, yeah, now we're going to let you make an R movie.
Yeah.
He did turn down X-Men.
Nice.
The chance to direct X-Men to make this movie.
I think we kind of won in that deal, though,
right? I definitely think we won in that deal.
I think we lost hard,
but also we won.
Yeah.
Because it was a good movie. I don't...
Yeah.
I feel like it would have been a terrifying movie, and we would have had one X-Men.
We
wouldn't have Days of Future Past.
Right. That could have ended it.
He could have ruined it all.
Not that we don't have faith in you, Paul W.
Yeah.
But we don't have faith in you.
Let me get into the I'll get into the weird stuff, then I'll tell you the synopsis first.
Okay.
So this movie was a huge box office flop. It recouped only $47 million of its estimated $60 million production budget. And Rotten Tomatoes now gives it a 24% rating.
Oof.
Which, by the way, is 5% higher than our little movie we were talking about up top, Transcendence. I personally remember this movie, like in my high school hangout days, of it just constantly being on HBO and just like watching it a bunch of times and being terrified every single time.
Yeah.
Do you remember watching it around that time, or did you see it in the theater?
I did not see it in the theater. This here's what I was informed of last night, where I was like, oh yeah, that's why I don't fucking remember seeing this in the theater. This movie opened the same weekend as the movie Copland, Sylvester Stallone, Robert De Niro. And I was all about that movie.
Sure.
So there, I'm pretty sure I was like my smart ass at that point. I was like waiting in line with, you know, all the other many people there to see Copland, and I looked over across at everybody who's the seven people who were there to see Event Horizon.
The same 10 people, seven of those, seven in the 10 that went to see Transcendence.
Exactly. You're gonna make this mistake again, kids.
Yeah. I feel like this movie's 97, so. It really is like, it's post-Stargate, obviously, but it's coming to, I feel like that is, the Matrix is like 97 or on the way,
it's
coming.
Like 99, yeah.
So I feel like it just kind of got swept into nothingness of like, because even the name Event Horizon doesn't really sound like, it's not evocative of anything specific.
Yeah.
Because it is something that already exists in space, it's like, not specific. It's not vague enough, but it's too
It fell into that category of movies when I was growing up, like Leviathan and like Deep I was going like Deep Space Six or something like that, where it was like, I knew like, okay, this movie's going to take place in this one location. There's going to be a monster. There's going to be a crew. I can't wait to see what the monster looks like. You know, that was kind of like the thought process that you had for these movies. I remember seeing the trailer to this and actually being like, well, it looks cool.
For sure.
They
spent a ton of that $60 million on special effects.
Yeah.
Let me get into the synopsis.
For sure.
And we'll pop back into the other stuff so that it makes more sense for people.
Absolutely.
So this is from the IMDb page, because I'm not good at writing synopsises. I would just write the script again, and then we would just act it out.
Sure.
So in the year 2047, a signal from the starship Event Horizon is picked up on Earth. The ship had disappeared without trace beyond the planet Neptune in 2040. Her loss was considered the worst space disaster on record, with her entire 18-person crew missing and presumed dead. The ship had since reappeared in a decaying orbit around Neptune at the outer rim of the solar system and more than 3 billion kilometers from the nearest outpost of the Saturn moon of Titan. The rescue ship Lewis and Clark, dispatched to investigate. the ship's crew is commanded by Captain Miller, Lawrence Fishburne, and carries the Event Horizon's designer, Dr. William Weir, who is Sam Neill. I wonder after they wrote that, because William Weir that's like a reference to a scientist or who is also an occultist. I wonder if they were like, God, I really shouldn't have named him Weir. It's like a hard thing for people to say.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Weir. Yeah.
We got to get it. We're here.
We're here.
Where are you going?
It also stars, so we have Larry Fishburne and we have Sam Neill.
Is he Larry or Lawrence at this time?
He's Lawrence at this time, but I'm going with the 92 version of Larry.
Okay, for sure. Yeah, there's pre-Larry and there's post-Lawrence.
Yeah. I mean, if I was being respectful, I would call him Lawrence.
Okay.
I'm being disrespectful right now. Sir Lawrence Fishburne. Stars Sir Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes.
And then, of course, Sam Neill, his Jurassic Park heat is totally winding down at this point, I feel like. And then we also get Kathleen Quinlan starring as Veronica Cartwright in this movie.
Yes, she is. That's great.
So, yeah, Ricky, before we get into the bests and worsts, how do you feel about this movie?
Well,
how does it make you feel on the inside of yourself as a human being?
It was, this is the second time I saw it. So
ever.
I was ever. And it'll probably be the last time I see it.
Sure.
And it'll be the last time I speak of it. Not as bad as I remembered it being from just the year in that I saw it. The biggest flaw that it has, the best thing that it has going for it, is also its biggest flaw. And I don't want to get too much into it because we'll
do our best.
Yeah,
don't spoil your best.
Come on now. But I'll just say a couple things that as I was watching that struck me. Those effects, huh? Effects that rival gravity, I'd say.
I do think that for the time, though, some of them, you know, when they're in that in the core room or
yes.
whatever, when they're first in it and all mm-hmm. the goo or whatever is floating around, it looks so bad because of, you know, the rendering engines. And yeah. they actually didn't use, like, a big, well-known effects house on purpose. They filmed all of this stuff in the UK, I think. They didn't film it here. So they used...
Shepperton Studios?
Yeah.
Was it really?
I think, actually, you might be correct.
What a guess!
So they used studios there, like, smaller studios. So I think it's a little evident,
mm-hmm.
but... the idea that that stuff would be floating the way that it is, and then as soon as the gravity gets turned off, it goes psh, and slams into the ground.
For sure.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty cool idea.
I think so.
I think even clearly they put so much money, and I guess that the black hole generator,
mm-hmm.
the engine of the ship, the core, the center, the heart of it, when they redesigned it to make it look the way it is now, just to... make it move was super expensive.
Oh, really?
So that thing ended up taking all of the stuff away from everything else, which really shows because there's times where they're like on a spacewalk and they're clearly like the actors are giving it their all to make it look realistic.
Oh, for sure.
That they're outside and they're just standing there.
Yeah.
There's no atmosphere, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. A lot of the budget went into that spinning ball with the spikes in
which
it.
Which also was
and
really hard
great.
For people to act around. Because it made them dizzy, like physically.
Oh, really?
Visually dizzy.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Because of the way it moves around, that they couldn't, they had to like shoot stuff in really strange ways and change their shots that they had written out because it was so, it threw everybody off so much.
I really thought that thing was great. The Lewis and Clark, come on. What is that? When I heard that,
it's a bit much.
Somebody should have been. I wanted a character in the movie to be to have that reaction of we're calling our ship the Lewis and Clark.
We're still called that.
Yeah, we didn't want to call it the Enterprise. Huh? How about the Jenny?
I do love that the character Stark, who's like the lieutenant.
Which one was
the
Stark?
The blonde woman.
Yes,
her name's Jolie something. The only thing I can think of is Jolie Fisher. And
that's who I was expecting.
I know, me
like,
too.
Like when I saw the name
of
the credit,
Jolie Fisher.
I was like, oh, she's in this. Okay.
Cool. She went from Ellen, the sitcom, to Event Horizon.
Yeah,
okay.
Good on you, girl.
But that character was originally written as a man.
Okay.
And then they saw that actress. They were like, oh, it can be a woman. It could just be a woman.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
I thought she was great, too.
Didn't, and I do, now this might be part of your, I'm going to say this. This is not part of my best or worst. It's just a general thing. I do think this movie took the alien idea and the, like, alien blueprint.
Oh, yeah.
And went, okay, we'll just make that and then we'll plop in our new ideas and then we'll change it a little bit. And I think it works.
Yeah.
I think it actually works because
sure.
it is a visual and like dramatic way of telling a story that makes sense to human beings. Like you see the one guy, then you find out about more of these people. They have a rapport with each other. It makes sense that they're talking to each other. They all get scared. They all talk about it. Then they go through this thing together. And it makes total sense.
The script is smart in that way, in that they took things that work from other movie. You can also call that lazy writing as well.
Sure.
But I mean, the whole military crew and they're all, I mean, that's totally alien/aliens. I really liked the paranoia aspect that everybody has about each other. And when they watch the video of the crew that was there before, that's straight up John Carpenter, The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, It works. What else was the Solaris? I don't know if you've ever seen that one, the George Clooney one. Our boy Steven Soderbergh.
Steven,
we'd love to have you on the show, bro.
Anytime. I also loved speaking to the alien angle that with Stark and Miller that there was like this faint, like tiny remnant of them maybe being attracted to each other, but maybe also just working together and caring about each other for that reason. Similar to like Dallas and Ripley in Alien.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, I could see how they maybe do, but they're in this crazy situation. They just care about each other.
For sure, absolutely.
That's what this is. And it makes it more of a human story when those things happen, because you would really do that if you knew somebody that well, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Also, a little known fact, the gateway from Event Horizon, the spinning orb, the brother of the gateway from Stargate.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people don't know
that. I thought they looked so much like each other.
They're like the Gyllenhaals of gateways.
Yeah. I also have to say, and then maybe we'll pop into the bests and worsts after this, or maybe a few more things. I don't know. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
I thought that the gateway room in Event Horizon, I've seen this movie a couple times before, and then when I saw it, I thought, holy shit, that is the map room in Prometheus.
That's totally the map room in Prometheus.
It is the same thing.
Yep.
Which is fascinating to me that this movie took Alien and went, okay, we'll just take that, and then we'll make this other stuff. And then Prometheus was like, oh, we'll just take that out of this movie that took from that movie, and we're supposed to be the previous movie that makes that movie make sense.
Another little known fact, that Event Horizon gateway, the sister to the machine from Contact.
Yes.
Also the spinning traveling orb thing, and all of them related to the Overlook Hotel.
Yeah, they all were built there.
Hollywood history for you right there.
Yeah.
What was your question before I went
I don't think I even had one.
Really silly rant there?
Oh, it's quite all right. I think... There's some, one question I do have is that they went.
Let's break this shit down.
They went onto a ship where, all the crew is possibly dead. They don't know what's going on. They go onto the ship, some of them, not all of them. Then they get to the hull or whatever, the deck, the whatever that's called. I can't remember. And there is blood and guts everywhere.
Everywhere.
And they're like, I wonder what happened here.
Yeah.
And then they just stay in there. The whole, they don't clean it off. They don't put a sheet over it or something. Like, this is terrifying. It's just that weird, strawberry jelly is just on the wall.
Like, the whole time. It's hanging on there.
It kind of looks like a face a little bit. You know, no. I know it's only 20 hours. You would not be able to be in that room.
Absolutely.
With blood and guts and be like, oh my God, I wonder what happened in here. People were murdered in here.
And
that's what happened.
They don't know where, it's coming from. You don't think it's coming from that room with the moody lighting and that weird spinning ball with, just spikes sticking out of it?
You don't think it's coming from this terrifying Spencer's gift shop that you guys have in the center of your... that sucked your friend into it, and then when he came out in a catatonic state. It's probably not that though. Something else.
No. We should listen to this doctor guy who insists on us never leaving.
Weir.
Yeah, if that's his real name, Dr. Weir.
Seems to be missing a letter. All right. Well, let's get into the let's do the worst parts first.
Okay.
What's your worst part, Ricky?
This is what I was going to touch on earlier. It's stylized to a fault. The story takes second place, I think, to how good the sphere looks. Do they ever name what that sphere is?
I feel
is
like
it just
there is
because like the core or some shit.
I think they're calling it Hillary Swank, the core.
I think it's Hillary Swank's the core.
Hillary Swank's
when
the
they
core.
Go when they go down there and they watch the core, that scene right there. Another scene, a lot of trailer moments I noticed were, and then I started to notice. Well, I'm just waiting for the trailer moment now. There's a great scene where Sam Neill is crawling through that little air duct way, but it's not an air duct.
Oh, yes.
And it's
green. All lit up and stuff.
Yeah. And then, it does, that cool Goodfellas zoom in, but still panning out. That moment is really great. The one guy who gets stuck, the guy who's not Matt Damon, that's who, you know who I'm talking about? The guy who gets
not
sucked
Justin.
In.
Justin is the one that gets sucked in.
Yeah, him. He's not Matt Damon.
Got it.
When he gets...
He looks like he was a kid's game show host on Nickelodeon in 1989. That guy looks like to me.
That's the only way
I can describe him.
He was on some short-lived MTV series I used to watch where he was dead, but he had to... I think that's what it was. He was dead. He had to find out why he was dead. I don't know.
It
lasted a season, but it was great.
Yeah.
Very Terminator 2-esque-ish. Another scene, another trailer moment is when... he's going to get shot out literally into space. You know, he gets trapped in that room. Lawrence Fishburne has to, like, fly through in his space suit and those amazing effects. But just, like, moments like that where, like, those moments are great. But in between, it's just them standing around going, wait, you mean we're losing our minds right now?
Yes.
I'm not losing my mind. Are you losing your mind? Wait, put that knife down. Like, the movie just can't stand on that, you know? So that was my worst part of the movie. Too much style.
Too much style.
Too much style.
Have you ever seen Alien Resurrection?
I have seen Alien Resurrection.
Because that's the other, I mean, like, the other milieu or whatever of a bunch of these same things. So my worst part, now, I did say up top that the writing is, like, the script is not that bad. But there are some moments where the script is pretty poor. And I have a very specific one that I had to stop and rewind and make sure that I heard this correctly. There is a scene where they're, like, all yelling at each other about what's going on. It's like mid-escalation of this horror that's happening to them. And they're meeting and disagreeing with Dr. Weir. And Dr. Weir storms off and leaves the room. Then it cuts to the hallway that he's storming into. And Lawrence Fishburne, Captain Miller, comes around the corner. And he says to him, "Don't you walk away from me, mister." There is no way that an adult man would say to another adult man, especially two adult men that are,
yes,
in the military,
mm-hmm,
would say, "Don't you walk away from me, mister." So that is my worst part. What is your best part, Ricky?
The best part, I would say about it, you know, it's the movie's shot very well. It reminded me of, it is kind of like the, it has a Jan de Bont type.
Ooh,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you just,
yeah.
Rhea dropped milieu on you. You don't think I'm going to drop?
I don't think I used it right, but I dropped it.
You did. And I'm not going to pick it up. I'm going to leave it there.
Just leave it on the ground.
That's right. So I will drop a Jan de Bont reference on you. And similar to, like, early John Carpenter movies, which just has this, like, this great aspect ratio where everything is just has this panoramic view to it, a lot of, like, depth of focus. I'm always, I love cinematography.
It's so almost like in, I totally agree that it's almost like in some parts they're replicating the window of the ship,
yes,
as the view of the way we're looking at them.
Yeah, it does.
Which I found to be very interesting.
I like that it would do the camera would do the pull the great trick. I mean, the effect wasn't always great, but what they were going for was when somebody would be standing, you know, looking outside into space, and the camera would be outside, you know, supposedly in space, and it would start to pan back, and then it would start to dolly and spin.
That shot you're talking about took them 10 weeks to do.
Are you serious?
And it took up a lot of their budget.
Oh,
just
wow.
That opening, establishing, crazy,
yeah,
shot of him in the
I mean,
thing.
I really yeah, like things like that. I was like, okay, this. And I bet you, like, on a big screen, all right, that looks great.
For sure.
Moody, atmospheric.
Absolutely.
You might say.
Totally agree with you. My best part, if you don't include some of the practical effects in this movie are great.
Mm-hmm.
Like when whatever is trying to get into one of the rooms and Dr. Weir's like, open it, the door.
Yeah.
It's clearly like people punching and stopping on metallic spandex. And then at the end, they're like trying to hold on. And it's supposed to be metal grating that he's holding onto. And it's clearly like an anti-fatigue mat that they've painted silver. I love that, which was just great. But my favorite part, this is going to be crazy that this is my favorite part.
Oh, I love it already.
My favorite part is like the visualization of the crazy, like, horror orgy that happens.
Yeah.
Because it is, like, kind of a reference to this famous painter, Hieronymus Bosch, and I went to art school, so
this
it makes me really happy.
This episode is fucking knowledge, yo.
He was a painter who was from a long, long time ago, Dutch, I believe, and he would paint in triptychs, and one of his paintings that basically was a huge influence on the surrealist movement of the 1930s, his painting, which is called The Garden of Earthly Delights, is a triptych, and the third section is basically just hell. And it's like weird animals eating people, other people eating people. It's crazy, and it looks just like that video. And I love the reveal of it. I love that they have just the audio at first, and they're like listening to that, and it's terrifying immediately.
Yeah, it is.
But they're all just like, okay, well, I guess we just gotta, this is our job, so we gotta figure, and then they're, you know, trying to think about that thing, and then they have the video kind of, they can't really see it, and then it like comes in, and then there's that jump scare of like when she finally does see it, and then you see it, and you're like, holy shit. Like, you know something really bad happened.
Yeah.
But then you start to see that, and you can't even make all of it out. It's intense.
Yeah,
and that stuck with me from that seeing it the very first time. I was like, that is an insane thing that just happened.
So that is a really great moment. It's like Hellraiser, right?
Yeah, Hellraiser was the influence for the core and for the...
Oh, is that right?
Devil.
Okay.
Yeah, it was highly influential to this movie.
That shit's really creepy.
Yeah.
True that. True
awesome.
That.
Awesome. So, Ricky, on a scale of 1 to 5, whoa, is that the devil's privates right there? Horizon.
I would give Event Horizon 2, whoa, is that the devil's privates?
I was going to say the devil's dong, but that felt like too dirty, but there I just said it anyway.
Well, there you go.
So
I'll say it, the devil's dong.
So 2, okay. You know what? I will give Event Horizon 3 out of 5. This almost NC-17 rated film is tame compared to most episodes of Games of Thrones. Games of Thrones?
Games of
Thrones. Game of Thrones out of 5. So I'll give it 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
We didn't hate it.
We didn't hate it.
We didn't hate it. We enjoyed it.
It's totally worth watching.
Yep.
I think if you haven't seen it, now you know everything.
Yes.
But I don't know. I think it's still a worthwhile. Actually, I liked it more looking back on it because I had just watched Transcendence. They talk about Transcendence in this movie. And they talk about the singularity in this movie in regards to something way more interesting than just somebody being plopped into a computer and then that's basically it, about like universes that we don't understand and black holes and all the power that's associated with that. I don't know. I thought it was a very cool look into hell, basically.
Is it an original script?
Yes.
I mean, kudos for them being able to put an original script together and get that story out there.
Absolutely.
Outside of like those tropes that we talked about, I mean, it felt like... Yeah, this isn't a movie that...
It's a decent sci-fi movie.
It's a standalone.
It's a decent standalone.
Yep.
Although clearly I think they were trying for a sequel with the way that movie ended, but...
Event Sunset, yes.
Event Sunshine. awesome. So, Ricky, what are you going to leave us with this week?
A couple things that have been entering my world that I'm enjoying. You know, we're feeling right now, Rhea, we are feeling... The Bret Easton Ellis podcast. I'm enjoying that man's podcast, Bret Easton Ellis.
Even though he's a proven misogynist.
Sure. Here's why I like it, because he will say things that I will go, "Oh, you're crazy. Oh, you're insane." Or, "Oof, no way. Do I agree with that?" But he's able to present his opinions and his views still in an intelligent manner, whether or not I agree with it. I don't care, because I'm just like, oh yeah, no, it's engaging conversation that I'm listening to and viewpoints that I'm hearing from him. And he has great guests on there. Episodes in particular that I listen to that if people want to jump to, his first episode is with Kanye West.
Whoa.
Which is a really great one. He has a great episode with Marilyn Manson.
What the hell?
Yeah. He has a great episode I just listened to with Ivan Reitman. And I'm listening to the Ivan Reitman episode, and he starts off, every episode starts off with him kind of letting you know what you're going to hear and like where his mind is. And he starts off talking about how terrible his interview went with Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein. Is it Brownstein? Is that right?
Brownstein, yeah.
Brownstein from Portlandia, and how just it was a very uncomfortable experience. So I immediately stopped the Ivan Reitman episode and listened to
that one.
And they talk about misogyny. It's just a very engaging conversation.
Yeah,
that
I think I'll be listening to that episode
really,
first.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good.
Awesome.
R.I.P. to DJ Easy Rock, you heard? And check out Peanut Butter Wolf's 24-hour Valentine mix that he made. It's a 24-hour mix that's broken down into, I believe, 11 sections. They're all about 2 hours each. I don't do math, but I hope that's right. And you can find that at stonesthrow.com. It's take your panties off music, kids.
Gross, you said panties.
Yeah, I did.
Ugh,
I'll say it again.
Disgusting.
Panties. Maybe you want to get all up in them guts.
Oh, God.
Listen to it with this.
You said peanut butter and panties and guts all in the same phrase, and now I feel weird.
I feel like a poet.
I feel super weird. No, I don't feel weird. Well, let's see. What am I? I'm going to leave you guys with just one thing this time. I usually come with like a whole tool belt full of things to recommend, but this time it's just one that I watched. I've watched, I think, all of the 30 for 30s that are available on Netflix. I have an addiction to them. I super love sports documentaries, super love sports movies. I cry at all of them. I mean, I like sports. I really do. I just don't like professional sports these days because it sucks because it's politics. But I love 30 for 30s. And I finally watched the real Rocky one. Mm. I think I'd been putting it off because I'm an avid fan of the Rocky series. I came to it late. I didn't watch them until I was, I think, 26. And then I became like, I just watched them all the time. And I was living by myself, and I would just put on like one or two or three. I would just watch them constantly because, I don't know, I just related to it. I loved it. I love those movies. One is great. Two is great. Three is great. Four is okay. Who cares about five? Six is pretty good. Six is pretty good. That's how I feel about it. So I think I put it off for a while. And this is a story. Now, you guys are going to be shocked. I feel like more people should be giving me shit for not having good notes because I never have good notes.
These are great notes. What are you talking about?
The real Rocky's name is not written down on my notes.
Oh, it's all right.
But I think it's appropriate for this story because nobody knows who he is.
Everybody thinks it was Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, Sylvester Stallone. This boxer in New Jersey. It is fascinating how much of his story is Rocky. So I'll just leave it at that. It's really well put together. The Rocky theme is playing in the background of it, and they're talking about how whenever he would go into bars, people would put it on in the jukebox, then he would put it on. It's just a fascinating story. I really enjoyed it.
Nice.
Like a lot.
Where could they see that if they wanted to see that?
Oh, it's on Netflix. Thank you, Ricky.
Boom. You're welcome.
Readily available on Netflix. Awesome. So next week, we're going to be watching The Fifth Element, which is on Netflix Instant right now. So you can watch that and then chat with us about it next week. And until then...
I'm Ricky Carmona.
I'm Rhea Butcher. And that's not Cameron. I'm used to doing that in threes. It's weird with just twos. Wham Bam Pow has been recorded by Lindsay Pavlis at Max Fun Studios. Thank you, Lindsay, and thank you, Maximum Fun, and thank you for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.